Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
I would be normally happy to introduce Marcy Rubart and say thank you for coming. I will say that. Thank you for coming. Brunetta was going to do the honors this morning of introducing Marcy, and she wrote me an email this morning to say Marcy will introduce herself.
So, oh.
Marcy,
all right.
It's up to you.
Thank you. Thank you. As I was just sitting here, I was feeling an immense gratitude for the practice of Sangha and also for the turning of time. We're at the end of another decade. Decades come and decades go. And that passage and that impermanence, while sometimes scary, also feels like a real sense of comfort. And as we were thinking about Ralph this morning, I found myself thinking about my mother, who died now 35 years ago, and was instrumental in this side of my practice that was the spiritual side of my practice.
Marcy, why don't you move that, this here?
This? Okay.
Yep. Sorry. You can't, like, it's not picking up.
Is that any better? Okay. So now what do I do? I'll hold it.
Well.
I can hold it.
Really?
Yeah. So I wanted to also start by my own feeling of vulnerability to be here talking. I don't think of myself as a spiritual teacher. I don't think of myself as having grown up that much yet. And while I was comfortable in this role in my professional life, it's a really different role in my personal and spiritual life. So I'm grateful for that opportunity as well. The self-introduction is that my background is a mixture of having grown up in Berkeley in the 60s with National Guard tanks on the streets, a lot of social activism, and a real commitment to social justice that has been a thread in my life throughout. That did coincide with the establishment of a strong meditation practice around the time that my mother was dying. And it's only relatively recently that I've been looking for ways to bring those two paths together. As long as I was in my professional life, I kind of had my meditation practice on my cushion and I had my professional life, but it wasn't very purposeful of how does one inform the other. So then we arrived to 2016 and the election of Trump. And I found myself trying to understand what happened. How did that happen? How did we end up with such divisions between us? I found myself challenged. How do we bridge the commonality of humanity? How do we bridge our common suffering? Even yesterday, I was talking to Bill Moyer at Backbone, and we were sort of riffing on polarization and what does the polarization mean? And for me, the bottom line there comes back to how do we find our common humanity? Even as a lot of political and social activists are feeding the polarization that we're experiencing. So my challenge in responding to Trump is how do we create a situation that gets us out of this without landing in more of the same? How do we do more than change the color of the hat I'm wearing from red to blue? And I don't think I have answers to that. What I have to offer today is some reflections and some questions. But what I am working with is not what do things look like in 2020, but what do I want things to look like in 2050 or 2070? And I had the opportunity, I'll tell you a little bit more in a minute, to work with an organization who has a strategic plan for 250 years, a nonprofit. That's the kind of paradigm shift that I think we're looking for now. So that organization, just for your information, and a lot of what I'm talking about this morning was catalyzed by a retreat that I was at with them last July under the auspices of Fellowship for Reconciliation. It's called the East Bay Peace Academy, or East Point Peace Academy. And that's as contrasted to West Point Military Academy. So that's the way you're gonna be able to remember their website, or you can ask me about it later. But their website is eastpointpeace.org. So I encourage you to look them up, because I find them to be a very inspiring organization in the face of some of these transitions that I think we're all struggling with right now. So when they were offering this workshop called On Fierce Vulnerability, I took it as a challenge that I can talk about Vision 2050 or Vision 2070, but maybe this is language that describes the paradigm shift I'm imagining. So I just want people, and I'm going to set this down for a minute, to practice a bit their description of fierce vulnerability. So take your right hand and hold it up. This is fierce. This is stop. This is not okay. Simultaneously, this is, we're human, we're in this together, it's love and compassion, it's our shared suffering. So for me, this is a visual, even sensational image of what that new paradigm might look like, feel like. Okay. So, East Point's description. Fierce vulnerability is about trying to build a powerful direct action movement that has the fierceness to shut down highways and the vulnerability to open up our hearts. It is about acknowledging that we need to escalate our tactics in order to manage the escalated levels of violence that we are witnessing across society, while doubling down on our commitment to hold the dignity of all people. It is about reclaiming the militancy of nonviolence, while knowing that for us, the work of resistance is about healing our traumas and repairing our relationships. That's a lot to absorb. I think we have a few examples. A month or two ago, there was a film at the high school called The Hate U Give. I feel like Greta Thunberg offers us some modeling around this. I figure like that there's a lot of people that are thinking about how do we balance these two. We were looking at an organization yesterday called Waging Nonviolence. That's not very different from fierce vulnerability. So there's a lot of people working on it. I don't know that there's a lot of answers, but there are some doors opening and questioning happening around that. So I'm going to start with vulnerability. That's the one I've been working on more of my life. Has anybody seen Brené Brown YouTubes or thought about vulnerability? Brené Brown suggests that vulnerability is a sign of courage. Not being afraid to fail or to lose our sense of connectedness due to fear that.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.